WNST Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are having some Wise conversations. Big shout out to our friends at Wise Marks. I'm telling you more about them as opening day gets here. And I know Don Moeller is very happy that I've put Oriel Park at Camden Yards in such a glowing light behind me. But I'll be having Fadley's Crab Cakes before opening day on the 8th of April. We'll be talking crab cakes with our friends at State Fair. Probably going to be talking margaritas with El Guapo when we get Evan Brown on here 2 weeks from now as well. Little crab cake tour in my future. And Don, we have gone back into the past and grabbed some guests and brought them to the forefront. But it is amazing how topics and the news cycle moves along and what we were talking about the last time we got together with this guest, correct?
Well, one of our favorite guests, former 4th District Congresswoman from the state of Maryland, MSNBC contributor, Washington Post columnist. You can't turn on cable news without seeing her in her beautiful house. We always give her a 10 on Room Raider. So, Congresswoman, before we get into all of the madness, you may or may not know, we're putting every guest on the spot. Nestor is getting ready for the next 18 months. He's going on the great crab cake journey in the state of Maryland. So if some of your friends pop into town and they come down your way in Prince George's County and they say, all right, Congresswoman, take us to get the best crab cake in your area. I know what you're thinking.
Keeping in mind, she also wasn't born here. You're not a native, correct?
No, but I mean, I have lived here almost 40 years.
But so, you did like discover a crab cake at some point beyond your youth. I mean, I was born eating crabs and Don still says I do it wrong.
Totally true. I mean, I really did not. I mean, you know, we lived in the desert sometimes, so we weren't eating a lot of crabs or crab cakes. But when we came to Maryland and discovered crabs, I mean, as a kid, you know, a college student, I can remember being with my parents camping and, you know, going crabbing and, you know, you love to eat what you can catch. It's great to go buy them, but when you get them, they taste even better.
Nothing you got to earn like it.
So where I know where Wayne Curry used to take me. Now you tell me where you would take me to get a crab cake down your neck of the woods.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because now I live over at National Harbor. And there is a great little crab place here, and it's just a takeout.
There you go, Nestor.
Really, really good. I think they're based out of, they may be based out of Annapolis, I guess. And so, and we've got McCormick and Schmick's is over here too. So, you know
what's interesting is I think of crabs as a Baltimore thing, right? But like I talked to someone pretty significant in buying Maryland crab. He says DC has as good a crab cake as anywhere because they do source local and because so many people come to DC looking for a crab cake and don't want to come to Baltimore.
Well, and I'll tell you a secret. My absolute favorite, not everybody can go there, but the Democratic Club has the best crab cake
See,
going.
Where you get the insiders. This is where I get inside information.
Come on, take your Baltimore positive.
We don't need to talk any politics. Thanks for stopping by, Donna. It's not going to get any better than that. We plateaued here.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, thanks for those wonderful ideas. And you just let us know, and Nestor and I will.
I'm not going to hear that from anybody else, I don't think, right?
I don't think we'll get that call. So now, all that good stuff aside, Congresswoman, it breaks my heart to have this next topic be front and center again. And it is another mass shooting. I remember, I'll give you a quick story. It was an awful story. I was on the school system side at the time of Columbine. And I remember we were actually in a meeting and someone walking in and saying there's a mass shooting at Columbine. And at that time, it was horrific, but it wasn't familiar. It wasn't familiar. We'll say, okay, Dylan Roof, trench coats. It wasn't familiar. And now the data is just so stunning. I saw one piece of data that says that since 2013 in the United States of America, we've averaged one mass shooting a day. almost 2,200 mass shootings. You were in Congress. You couldn't get anything done. I'm sick of not being able to get anything done. That's my rant. Help us understand what's going on.
Yeah, I've been on this issue for a very, very long time in terms of trying to, you know, create a system of sensible gun laws. When I worked on issues around domestic violence, I worked specifically on the domestic violence offender gun ban back in the 90s because, you know, so many, mostly women who are in abusive relationships lose their lives because there's a gun in the house. And, you know, I fondly like to say, I actually beat the NRA on that. We passed the legislation, they took us to court and all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the law ended up, you know, still being on the books. But we have so many loopholes in the system. And, you know, the thing about this last week and a half is that in 1 week, it wasn't one mass shooting. It was two mass shootings that we know about. I mean, a mass shooting is defined as four or more people other than the victim, other than the perpetrator dying in one incident. And it just doesn't stop. When I was in Congress, I mean, first of all, I was in Congress and actually up in Newtown at right after the Sandy Hook slaughters of all of those kindergartners. And, you know, and meeting with families, and it was just, you know, so devastating. I was down in Charleston at the service when President Obama spoke so movingly and sang Amazing Grace, and, you know, members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. By the time I left Congress, I had stopped showing up to stand for moments of silence after this, because we would stand, Democrats and Republicans, for a moment of silence and offer our prayers and our support of victims. And then we would just do nothing. I was one of the, you know, leaders along with John Lewis of a sit-in on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives by members of Congress to say we have to do something. And yet here we are. And, you know, some of the things that we want are actually that advocates want are very, very simple. Background checks, thorough background checks, universal background checks, so that you wouldn't be able to be prevented from buying a weapon for some reason at a store, but then you could go to a gun show and buy one too. That should not happen. Things like, you know, banning high capacity magazines. You know, nobody who's going hunting needs a high capacity magazine or weapon. You know, if you do, you're having like mincemeat. You're not having something that you can actually eat and that would be recognizable as a, you know, as a deer or something. So these things are really sensible. The majority of the American people, Republicans, Democrats, and independents actually support those measures, and yet they get stomped in the Congress. I think this could be a little bit different. The National Rifle Association has applied for bankruptcy. It is not nearly the power that it was in our politics. And so maybe this offers some kind of opening that we haven't had in the past, but, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath on it. It is the great American tragedy in our children. I mean, I remember after Columbine, then as I was raising my son, all of the kids now who were in school, they know how to, you know, dive under their desks, lock their doors, hide in closets. I mean, this is what we have to teach our children instead of just having sensible gun laws in place.
Nowhere else in the world do they teach their children how to behave when someone comes in with a killing machine, right?
Well,
literally.
Nestor, that's the point I wanted to make, and it almost brings tears to my eyes every time I tell this story. But my granddaughter was either a sophomore or a junior in high school at the time. So many, again, unfortunately, run together. I think it was Parkland. And the next morning, her mom's an educator. While they're having breakfast, her mom sits her down and says, Ellie, I want to have a hard conversation with you. I want to talk about what I need you to do if there's an active shooter that comes into Catonsville High School today. And my granddaughter begins to cry. As I said, it's hard for me to tell the story. She begins to cry and says, Mom, I really don't want to talk about this. And her mom, tearing up, says, Ellie, I know you don't want to talk about this. We need to talk about this because I need you to be able to stay alive. And I thought, my God. And then I turn around and I see Senator Cancun railing again with this crazy stuff. And Congresswoman, that's your world. You were down there. Explain to me what Senator Cruz and Fist Bump Hawley, what are the Senator from Cancun and Fist Bump Hawley, what's the end game? Because as you point out, even on these provisions that I think nibble around the edges, I'm all for them. They're not going to get the 400 million guns off the street, which we need to have a serious discussion about. But they won't even nibble around things that have 90% support. You know how they think. What's the end game?
Well, I mean, for them, it's purely politics. They are playing to a niche, what I think is a small niche within the mostly the Republican Party, that has said all or nothing. Second Amendment right should, you know, take the place over our own public safety. And you know, and that wins votes within the Republican Party. It just does. But
well,
most
nothing's been marketed like the NRA, right? We talk about the NRA. It's a marketing machine, literally, over the course of our lifetime. My parents would come back and find this inconceivable. My father died in the 90s. He wouldn't believe where we are with guns in this country.
Well, I think, you know, in the years past, up until really the last couple of decades, there were many people who were members of the NRA who were basically hunters and shooters. And it wasn't about the gun industry. When the membership stayed, but they started, the NRA started placating and playing to the gun industry, that is when it changed. Their messaging changed, their strategy changed, because it was about protecting the industry and not about individual hunters and shooters. And so, but now it's even beyond the NRA as an institution, because it has been so devalued, because this theology has been so inculcated into conservative politics that it's now not separated. And look, if a vote were put today to a majority of the House and the Senate, and we already saw it in the House where these measures, as you described, and I agree with you, Don, these are really simple measures, you know, background, universal background checks and red flag laws. These are really simple things, closing that Charleston loophole where you're just saying, you know, I heard Jim Clyburn describe to me that the Charleston loophole really only applies to about 3% of applicants who apply for a gun for whom the background check can't be solidified within 72 hours. It could extend to 10 days. 3%. And we're protecting 3% to endanger all. I mean, the people in the Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston would be alive today had that background check been expanded to 10 days. And so, you know, it's about devaluing people's lives to protect a gun industry. And, you know, go ahead.
No, keep going.
No, I just think when I think about members of Congress, for them, it's about drawing a political line. It doesn't have anything to do with the policy, because if it had to do with the policy, it would be done, because the American people support these policies. But that's not what this is about.
Well, you get close, and obviously when you talk about it would pass, that's going to take us into to the filibuster. And again, for those of you who are joining us, we're with former 4th District Congresswoman from the state of Maryland, Donna Edwards. You see her every day on MSNBC, and you read her very often in the Washington Post. You know, Congresswoman, we talk about, we're up to where we have a mass shooting a day. We had Atlanta, and we had the mass shooting in the supermarket right after Atlanta. And then, just in the past couple of days, big story comes up on my news feed. Man arrested without incident in Publix supermarket back in Atlanta again. And I'm going, my goodness, you know, for people who may not be familiar with Publix, it's the Giant or the Super Fresh or the
Food Lion. Not as good as Wise Market.
Wise Markets, exactly right. That's what it is. And as I read the article, this gentleman had on his possession in the middle of a supermarket a semi-automatic rifle, a shotgun, four handguns, body armor, and a cache of ammunition, which, as you mentioned, I assume are the multiple rounds of magazines, ready to shoot up a supermarket in the United States of America. Now, here I come to you. We perhaps can fix that, because I'm not sure where Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema are, but perhaps we could fix that with 50 votes and the vice president casting the 51st, but it would call for the removal of the filibuster. And I have friends that I respect that are passionate on both sides of that issue, and they fill my head, and they all make good reasons. I know where I am. Where are you?
Get rid of it. Absolutely. I mean, I think, I look at the, you know, the Biden presidency, he's just, been in a couple of months, and he can be on his way to really creating an environment for landmark legislation that's so needed on so many different things, growing the economy, significant infrastructure investments, democracy reform, voting rights reform, which we know is really needed. The gun legislation that we've talked about, even going farther than just universal background checks. There are so many issues that are on the table that are that we need to fix. Immigration reform that we can't get to by getting to 60 votes, which is needed to break the impasse to get to a vote. And I think that we need to remove it. And I know I've heard people say, and we heard Mitch McConnell threatening Democrats that there would be scorched earth. There is nobody who has scorched the earth more when it comes to process than Mitch McConnell.
And so it is, you know. I'm going to interrupt you there.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My head, please continue with that, because my head explodes when he says that after he refused to appoint Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court. He then rams through three other justices. He rams through, with no hearings or anything, a $1.9 trillion tax cut for the rich. And he wants me to be afraid, Congresswoman, of scorched earth.
Right. I mean, and so, you know what, if we have to do, get rid of the filibuster to deliver jobs and climate change, then I say so be it, because the American people will be thanking us for it. If we have to do that to make sure that we protect people's lives by trying to do as much as we can to prevent these mass shootings and other shootings that are happening every single day in our urban areas, then let's do it. And so I can't listen to Mitch McConnell on that score. And the reality is that whether we do filibuster reform or not, if Mitch McConnell comes back into the majority as majority leader, he's going to scorch the earth anyway. And so I'm not listening to that. And I don't think Democrats in the Senate should be listening either. We should be focused on what can be done for the American people and, you know, make sure that we have rules in place so that the majority actually does govern. I mean, we're just talking about the majority governing. And I don't think, you know, some people have proposed these reforms, like make them, you know, really do a talking filibuster. Who doesn't think Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham and Josh Hawley and Rand Paul wouldn't just talk forever. Of course they would. So that doesn't do us any good in terms of moving legislation forward.
Former Congresswoman Donna Edwards is our guest from the 4th and MSNBC. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to ask you, Congresswoman, do you know Senator Manchin? I mean, I know you don't get to know everyone in Congress. Do you know Senator Manchin?
I do know Senator Manchin. And I think, I think Senator Manchin is an honorable man. I mean, I know him. I know his wife. I've traveled with him. And I have high regard for him. I think he's wrong on this, though.
Well, that's pretty simple. Fair enough.
Tell us, is he motivated purely by, I mean, listen, and I think we have to be cautious of this. I'm worried, you know, I would like to think he would never switch parties, which was it, Jim Devers, I guess, whoever had switched parties, that he would not do that. I do believe that once he's gone, Democrats are not likely to ever hold that Senate seat in my lifetime again. So he is important. So is he motivated in your mind, since you know him and have traveled with him and had broken bread with him, is he motivated clearly by understanding where his state is and trying to stay alive politically? Or is there really this Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith goes to Washington piece of him?
Well, he's no Mr. Smith goes to Washington. He's a sophisticated politician. He's the former governor of West Virginia. He's been in politics for a long time. He cares deeply about his state of West Virginia. We talked about West Virginia. I trust Senator Manchin's motivations. I don't agree with him politically on a whole range of issues. I think he's wrong in terms of, you know, where he views the filibuster and, you know, a number of other policy issues. But like I heard him in the last couple of days talking about infrastructure and saying that he thinks that that President Biden would be right to go big on infrastructure. Why is that? Because his state is going to benefit from investments in infrastructure. And so I don't question his motivations. If sometimes I question his, you know, strategy or policy. And I think he's a Democrat, but he's not a Donna Edwards Democrat. Let's just say that.
Fair enough. In Joe Biden, 2 months into this, and there's a report card every time you come on MSNBC, but I keep thinking that my wife has a vaccine right now. She's on a yoga float upside down in Key Largo, and I'm here doing this at this point without a vaccine, but I feel like it's coming. Uncle Larry said, April 27th, I believe at some point on or around Preakness weekend here in Maryland, I'll get my chance. As much as when I was a kid, they would say, how much are gas prices? That'll affect who gets elected. I really feel like the vaccine and normalcy, and in my vernacular, sports normalcy or a concert at Merriweather or outdoor things that we do here, if that becomes normal this summer, Biden's going to get real popular real quick, I think. Quickly, I should say.
Well, I think that that's happening already. Look, a month ago, I didn't know anybody who had gotten a vaccine yet. And now I know a lot of people in my own circle of friends. I got my first vaccine. I'm getting ready to get my
second one. I'm the only one on the call unvaccinated. Two out of three.
You're not old enough. but I now know a lot of people who've gotten back. And every day that that changes and the increased number of people who are vaccinated, I do worry about the reports coming out, especially that among Republican men, that there is, you know, this sense of, you know, I don't know whether it's invincibility or skepticism of government, of not wanting to be vaccinated. And I think that that does get in the way of us being able to achieve through vaccination the herd immunity that we're seeking that will bring things back to normal. But I think that we are getting there. Look, I believe that we're going to be wearing masks for a very long time, because even though you've been vaccinated, you can still carry it. All of our children haven't been vaccinated yet. They can still be carriers. These variants are out there. And, you know, so you could still get sick, but maybe not as sick, and certainly not hospitalized, and certainly not die. I mean, that's what the data says. But the normal of, you know, being with your friends and family, going to cookouts, going to, you know, baseball games, I think those kind of things are going to change significantly over the next several months if we can keep that vaccination going. And look, people are now starting to be able to get vaccines in their local CVS. I just saw a sign in my local CVS that said, well, I should say pharmacy, since we're not endorsing any one pharmacy, but that said, you can get a vaccine here. Just call and schedule an appointment. So we're getting there. And I think that, you know, the combination of the American Rescue Plan, which I would love to have a long conversation about because there's so much in there for so many people, those things are going to help get us back to the sense of normalcy that we've all been longing for after a year of, you know, being in our living rooms and dining rooms.
Well, we you know, you mentioned that, and I know we're coming up on the clock. We're going to be talking shortly with a good friend of yours, Wes Moore, who obviously is passionate about childhood poverty. He's going to talk about the Recovery Act. For folks who don't know, Congresswoman, from you say right, it's not a COVID pack. Again, they do this stupid thing. But only 9% of they didn't even count. I said, my wife said, well, why did they come up with a 9%? I said, well, suppose I told you that they don't even count the $1,400 stimulus payment. And she said, well, that can't be true. They would. I said, oh, yeah, that's true. They're not counting the billions. So they make up this fuzzy math, and they don't talk about all of these things that make us better as a nation. You, along with others, have been on this childhood poverty thing for so long. Talk about the importance of this act toward that.
Well, I mean, when you just look at the child tax credit alone, $3,600 per child for a child tax credit, it decreases as children get older. You know, child care assistance, these are things that move children from, you know, one in five children being food insecure to children being able to get a meal that's fed to them by their family. And that alone, you know, making sure that our children can get back to school so that not only are you, when you are fed and you are taken care of, you do better in school. I mean, that is just, I mean, that's just a rule. And so, you know, what this legislation, the American Rescue Plan, has done to lift children and families out of poverty is so significant. And I think that it's going to lead us to expand those provisions and certainly to make them permanent. Because when you lift children out of poverty and their families out of poverty, guess what they do? They get jobs, they pay taxes, they contribute to the common good.
And if you own a business, they buy stuff from you. Before we let you go, I got to go back to the beginning here. Tell me about this crab cake again. Democratic what now? I'm trying to get the notes again. And who do I need to know? Is this Van Hollen? Part? I know them all. Tell me how to get this.
Oh, man, I shouldn't have even mentioned it.
No, you have to mention it. I'm looking for
Dutch. It's right next to the Democratic National Committee, and you have to be a member to, you know, to go in there.
Dutch sneak me one out.
Does Dutch have a king? Great. Yes, he does. But they do make a great crab cake. But I'm going to tell you something. They are not to be rivaled with some of the other crab. And I have to tell you, during the pandemic, I've been so desperate that I've actually gone online to one of my favorite delivery services, and I've had crab cakes delivered.
No problem. You can do that with Faithless. You can do that with Costas. You can click away. That's
exactly.
Part of it.
What was the name? What was the name of that place that Wayne Curry lived at? Was it Jerry's Seafood? What was there?
Oh, it was Jerry's. Yeah, Jerry's makes great crab cakes.
Right. Yeah. Curry was always taking me. Every time we'd meet up, we would meet at Jerry's Seafood. Of course, you know, he'd hold court. And next thing I know, he's back in the kitchen. You know, because Wayne grew up or knew everybody there. Jerry, right. There's another one for you, Nestor. Jerry Seafood.
Well, see, yeah. I'm fishing it all out. I mean, I'm going all around.
Here in Prince George's County, we love our crabs and our crab cakes. So.
But you got the wrong football team. You know, I mean, that's just where that is. Baseball season, I appreciate you giving a shout out to that Congresswoman, because that's where Don is going to be beginning April 8th, right back here at Oriole Park.
Well, keep your social distance, please.
Oh, I'm washing hands, wearing a mask. We're following all the rules here until we all get shots and we're all safe. Always great to visit with you. We've been watching on MSNBC and reading your work at the Washington Post. Thanks for always making time for us.
Great. Thank you both.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And she's on TV and she's on Baltimore Positive. Former Congresswoman Donna Edwards joining us here. You can find Don Mohler probably over at State Fair, probably not eating a crab cake because they have these daily family menus every day. He's sharing it all the time, probably into some meatloaf or something before it's all over with. Make sure you're taking care of them. And our friends at Fadley's, if you're ordering some crab cakes, they're a click away and they are delicious. I am Nestor. He is former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler. We together are WNSD.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop those wise conversations at Baltimore Positive.